This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Latest on the crypto craze, Paramount streaming service, and technology Thursday, SpaceX has a successful prototype rocket launch. It lands successfully, too, but then explodes. We'll have the latest on that. Right now, weekly jobless numbers are out, wrangling continuing over a pandemic relief bill. Carl Riccadonna is here. He's chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, always good to have you on the show. Let's begin with the jobless numbers. Kind of give us a thumbnail of what's there and what it means.
Good afternoon, Cisco. Thanks for the invitation back on. The jobless numbers here, the filings for unemployment insurance are trending in the right direction, grinding lower, but they still are extremely high. So this is kind of emblematic that we're moving in the right direction in terms of the economy as a whole and also for the labor market. But it also illustrates that there is a very long road ahead until we have normalized the economy. And just to put a number around that, we are basically in the hole by about 10 million workers relative to where we were last year at this time before the pandemic was really wreaking havoc on the economy. And that's about 2 million wider in terms of that jobs deficit compared to the worst period after the prior recession back in 2007 to 2009. So really a lot of slack still lingering in the labor market.
And we're expecting, obviously, months, right, where it just sort of lingers like this until you get more vaccines and more of the economy opens?
Well, we're opening up in dribs and drabs, so I think we will start to see the trend move in a favorable direction. We already see this in data like retail sales and industrial production. So tomorrow morning, we'll be getting the February jobs report. I think we should be pleasantly surprised with a strong number. And then as we get into March, April, and May, I think you'll see a dramatic ramp up in the pace of hiring as even the most impacted sectors like restaurants and bars and hotels start to reopen to some degree as well. And so I think we're at the early stages of a crescendo of job creation over the next several months.
I always like to ask economists what they would like to see in a stimulus bill at this point. There's a lot of wrangling. We don't know what the final bill is going to look like. But based on what you're seeing in the economy, what do you think we need right now?
Well, given the amount of slack in the labor market and the huge number of unemployed individuals, while it looks like we're moving in the right direction and the president is suggesting that maybe all adults will be vaccinated or have the option to be vaccinated by the end of May, until we actually get to those conditions, we do need to provide support for those individuals who remain out of work and are perhaps in industries where a reopening can't be successfully achieved just yet. In fact, as we think about that reopening, my team combed through the employment data, looking sector by sector at which industries still were having a lower level of employment compared to where they were pre-pandemic. And it is the vast majority of industries. So we have this conception that it's a lot of bartenders and waiters and hotel workers who are filling the ranks of the unemployed. But actually, it's happening across a vast array of industries, even sectors like construction and manufacturing, which are perceived to be hot at the moment, still are operating at a lower capacity than last year at this time. So really providing aid to The unemployed is one of the most important aspects of this stimulus package.
Yeah, the Fed chairman acknowledging that you could see an uptick in inflation. Is that a concern at this point, or is it not as big a deal as just getting things going again?
I don't think it's a very big deal, in fact. Again, that number of 10 million out-of-work individuals, that's a lot of slack in the labor market. So when we talk about the unemployment rate only pertains to those who are looking for jobs. So if you've been out of work and you think the economy's so lousy you haven't been looking, or, for example, if you had to quit your job to stay home for childcare purposes during the pandemic, you're not counted among the ranks of the unemployed. So participation in the labor market is way down. If we push participation back to where it was in February of last year, we'd be looking at an unemployment rate much higher than the 6.3% presently. We'd be looking at an unemployment rate closer to about 9.5%. When you have 9.5% unemployment in the economy, you will not have an inflation problem.
Thanks so much, Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg. Just ahead, the latest choice in streaming is making its debut today. The field of streaming content providers continues to get more crowded with the addition today of Paramount Plus. We welcome Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group. Tim, kind of help us understand what Paramount Plus is. What are they going to have?
Great question, and they're late to the party by all accounts, but it basically is the amalgamation of content from Paramount Studios, the CBS television family, the Viacom company of channels, MTV and Nickelodeon and the like, and it's all, as they sort of call it, a mountain of content for two tiers of pricing. They, I would argue, had some benefit in being somewhat late or last to the major streamer party in that they've learned from others like Peacock before them, from NBC Universal, the idea of a couple of different tiers of access, one being a $10 a month fully premium with no ads offering and coming in June. A cheaper $5 a month plan that will have ad support. But, you know, the real challenge, right, and I hate to sort of strain the analogy the term here, but that they do have a mountain, proverbially, of challenges. It's got a lot of challenges in front of it, marketing-wise as well as consumer economics-wise.
Yeah, at some point, you and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, at some point, I mean, consumers are not going to have 10 different services, so you're going to have clear winners and losers here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think from a marketing perspective, it's going to be a challenge because most people don't understand that Paramount, as a brand name, they may remember it from, you know, a title slide before they watch a movie, but I don't think they understand sort of the what that means in terms of the library. I certainly don't expect consumers to understand what Viacom means. It means nothing. It's a company, right? But they do understand to an extent MTV and Nickelodeon and those brands. And CBS is now folded into this. So if you're a CBS All Access subscriber, that's essentially what you're being transferred into in this Paramount Plus thing. The access to the local channels like WBBM here in Chicago, it depends, frankly, and confusingly, on which tier that you're going to get. If you get the full premium $10 version of Paramount Plus, you'll have full access to Channel 2. If you only get the $5 a month with ad tier, you will not. However, strangely and more interestingly and curiously, you will have access to NFL football games. So it's getting very convoluted, and I think consumer marketing will be a challenge for this proposition, let alone can I afford another streaming service.
And can the companies make the money? I'm speaking more broadly than Paramount here. Can the companies make enough money if you have this sort of finite group of consumers that are just kind of going back and forth between the streaming services? They really need to be one of the ones that dominate in order to make it work.
Yeah, it's a great question. Really, Peacock and Paramount Plus are really transitioning from a linear television model that has been successful for them over the decades into a streaming one, which may or may not be. And then I think, frankly, the part of the economic issue there is, yeah, it's going to be very easy to switch on and off every month, unlike your cable system, which is far harder to cut the cord on or to cancel. So, yeah, the economics are going to get a little dicey and very uncertain, but make no mistake, everybody's putting their chips towards streaming, and it's now a big dogfight to see who will, if you will, reign supreme, or maybe plurally supremes.
Thanks so much, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertere Group. Up next, cryptocurrency skyrocketing in popularity, even though a lot of investors really don't understand it.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Bitcoin is a hot commodity, but many of the people investing in it do not have a clear understanding of it and other cryptocurrencies. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital. He's also author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago. Mike, always good to have you on the show. Let's see, we got Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Dogecoin. I mean, all of these cryptocurrencies, and yet the studies show a lot of people are investing in them and have no idea what they really are.
Well, good afternoon, Cisco, and thanks for having me on. And I'll be honest with you, this wouldn't be the first time an investor bought something they didn't understand. But I think what makes crypto especially dangerous is the fact that it is so highly technical and so difficult to understand. And also, it doesn't behave like a normal stock, so it doesn't have earnings. So you can't use any kind of fundamental analysis to try to value it. So, yeah, there's the story, and I read the story, a third of the investors don't understand crypto. Well, let me tell you right now, there's different levels of understanding. If you want to take it all the way down to understand it enough to invest it in it and value it, I would say 99% of investors don't understand that. But that does not stop people from doing it. It also wouldn't stop someone from making money in it. There are algorithms out there that don't care about what they are investing in, that they just invest in things based on momentum and things like that. And you can use those systems, and even in cryptocurrency, and it can work. So there are reasons that you can invest in crypto that make sense without understanding them. I'm not saying that most investors are using those reasons. I'm just saying that you can, if you're a momentum player or other reasons, it doesn't matter what you're investing in. You're more interested in the movement and the charting of the specific asset. So you can still be an investor and not understand it and make a case for why you're still investing. I just think in the case with crypto, a lot of people are just jumping on board because it keeps going up. And, you know, a lot of these end in tears, but so far with Bitcoin, it has not. So, I think a lot more than a third of investors don't understand crypto. I think most investors don't understand crypto, at least not to the level that they would need to invest in it.
Yeah, I think you probably have some people who don't understand it, but they don't want to say that because they're putting their money in it.
Yeah. Right. And it sounds, let's face it, it sounds kind of, I don't want to use the word dumb, but I will in this case. It sounds a little dumb to be doing that. But like I said, there you can make a case for investing in any asset if you have a system, okay, because systems and algorithms, let me give you an example. The best Renaissance is the best trading investor in the world. They've made 30% a year for 20 years straight. They have algorithms that don't care at all about what they're investing in, but they just know what the system, what will happen based on movements of the stocks, and they have mathematical formulas. Now, in that case, that makes sense, but we're talking about individual investors buying Ethereum because it keeps going up. Well, that's a dangerous game to play because you never know when things can turn around. It's worked so far. I caution investors to not play games that they don't understand, and I've been on here many times saying the same thing. I'll say that about crypto. Having said that, one other thing. I keep 1-3% of my assets in crypto. I believe that you should diversify a little bit into crypto because it is a unique asset class. And I think everyone should own some. So I'm saying own some, but I will not advocate trading it. I think that you buy and you hold. And Bitcoin is a legitimate asset class. But there's a lot of investors out there that don't understand it. It's not stopping them from investing. I'm just saying that if you're going to do it as a long-term investment, not as a get-rich-quick scheme. That's the difference, I think, here.
Thanks so much. Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The Capitol Police are requesting members of the National Guard continue their deployment to Washington. The Republican governor of one southern state decides to extend a mask mandate. It's Technology Thursday. The latest mission by SpaceX features an explosive return to Earth. The demise of the retail district, forcing many communities to rethink their planning. On the markets, the Dow down 336 points, the NASDAQ down 262, and the S&P down 49 points. Oil today is rising a little more than 5%. A mix of sun and clouds in Chicagoland. For the most part, sunny, though. Right now, 36 degrees with a wind chill that makes it feel like 26. Capitol Police have requested members of the National Guard continue to provide security for another 2 months. The move underscores continuing concerns about security and the potential for violence after Trump supporters breached the building in January, igniting violence that left five people dead. The proposal is being reviewed by the Pentagon. Alabama's Governor Kay Ivey bucking a trend by some Republican colleagues, extending the state's mandatory face mask order by a month as more states ease virus-related restrictions. The Biden administration is urging them to reconsider.
CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says it looks like virus fatigue is winning.
The exact measures we have taken to stop the pandemic are now too often being flagrantly ignored.
Like mask wearing. Texas and Mississippi have ended their mask mandates.
The last thing we need is Neanderthal thinking.
The president saying it's critical the nation keep following science to beat the pandemic.
I know you all know that. I wish the heck some of our elected officials knew it.
Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves tweeted in response that his residents don't need handlers. Sagar Mangani, Washington.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets sinking today. The Dow down 393, NASDAQ down 279, and the S&P is down 54 points. Let's find out what's going on. Bill Hart is joining us, president of Heartline Investment Corporation here in Chicago. Bill, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, it's a damaging day. But not atypical, given we've been up for 14 weeks in a row. You have to expect a downside, too.
And is this, in general, people taking some profits, maybe, or is there more to it?
Well, last time we spoke, Cisco, I pointed out that interest rates were the potential harbinger of a problem for the high PE end of the spectrum. And that's what's happened. It may be temporary, however. I think a lot of people are thinking this would be longer term. But in reality, the economy is just picking up because of COVID, the vaccines, and also because of a stimulus package in the works. And with those two, the growth of the economy is outpacing the ability to supply. Many suppliers have cut back their inventories and were planning on a weak economy because they needed to for maintaining profits. But now they're not able to supply, and so the prices go up, including oil and other commodities.
In a time where you already have a sluggish economy, is that a warning sign there that it may even get more sluggish before it picks up again?
Well, I think the market and the economy are two different things. I think the market could remain sluggish for a little while the fears of this higher interest rates and inflation are around, but it could ease off later. The economy, however, I think is going to pick up and continue picking up at a relatively fast pace.
So what should investors do, given there's still a little uncertainty? I mean, we don't even know necessarily what a stimulus deal is finally going to look like.
Well, I think the difference between traders and investors is important. The most important aspect to investing is really one's time frame. If you have a longer time frame, I think stick with a diversified portfolio of better than average companies, and you should do fine over the long term. If you're a trader, I think there's a time to just simply sit back and wait until this bump in the road is passed, and that may take a few weeks.
So are there certain sectors that you think, as an investor, you know, thinking in those terms, certain sectors that people should be paying special attention to?
Well, certainly, Cisco, on the short term, I think growth and momentum are lagging, and those will probably continue to lag for a bit. That even includes companies that like Apple and Microsoft that have been leaders up to now. The other aspect of the economy is, I think, some of the return to normal kinds of companies, those that were in the center of the pandemic, are particular opportunities now, but those may have been forgotten over the last 12 to 18 months, including some of the industrial companies and so forth that I think people will remember as they are growing, but they just haven't had any earnings over the last few months due to the pandemic.
Yeah, a lot of people hoping that turns around, obviously. Thank you for all the advice, Bill Hart. He's president of Heartline Investment Corporation here in Chicago. Just ahead, Technology Thursday, SpaceX suffers an explosive setback in its Mars program.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A reminder, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour, always available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. It's Technology Thursday. SpaceX's futuristic craft Starship exploded on the landing pad after returning to Earth yesterday. Two previous test flights crash-landed. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. Paul, I'm struggling not to laugh about this, but is this progress because it actually landed before it exploded?
Well, you can say that about a lot of disasters. It landed before it exploded. I think that in this situation, you know, Elon Musk is not somebody who looks at things in any conventional way. I think we all know that at this point. He laughs in some ways, or at least, you know, mild smile. He calls it an RUD, a rapid unscheduled disassembly. that's his description of this event. However, I actually hearken back to another genius. This one, an athletic one, a guy named Bodie Miller, a ski racer, who insisted, even though the journalists covering him didn't understand or didn't accept it, that he was not seeking wins. He was seeking great turns during a race. And to the same experience with Elon Musk, he's looking for achievement of certain engineering feats at one step at a time. So in this case, yes, the device, the SpaceX ship landed, did not explode. No word whether or not the explosion actually was on purpose. To throw people off. Who the heck knows? But many, many things were accomplished on the way to space flight for average citizens like us. And one of the things that was accomplished was maneuvers up there at about 30,000 feet that's, you know, transferred fuel, propellant from one place to another successfully. It worked. A rotation basically into what's called a belly flop move, which is actually something they wanted to do, also successful, and so on. So really a lot of successful milestones here. No word on whether or not it was intended to blow up after it landed successfully.
And yet it would seem as though you need to do those things over and over and over again before you can really say that you have a ship that's working properly.
That's exactly right. Look, anybody who's been through engineering challenges understands that it is the incremental successes that make the final success. It's not like you have to get everything done all at once. And this is clearly an example. This is unmanned. Nobody was harmed. Nobody was even surprised, as far as I could tell. But also, this is important. This is on the way to in 2023, the goal here, let's not forget, is a 6-day flight commissioned by a billionaire, a Japanese billionaire, which is called Hello Moon. And it's basically they are planning to take 6 days with 8 people this billionaire is inviting along with him that will go around the moon, look at it, and come back safely in 6 days. So every step, every engineering success along the way is going to build up, they think, and hope to a successful 6-day mission.
Yeah, and yet when you see an explosion like this, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think most people have to be going, hey, you go first, and we'll see how your 6-day flight goes, and then we'll see if I plan mine.
Right, exactly. Why don't we leave with the second 6-day flight? You, Cisco, and I will jump on that second one. But anyway, the short answer is yes. Of course, it is a spectacular physical failure, if you will. But again, no word on whether or not they wanted to destroy it, because the 3 maneuvers they made successfully actually would result in an unstable rocket ship that did, again, land without blowing up. It blew up after it landed. I don't know. I have not privy to those pieces of information. And end result, though, is I think Elon Musk, though, you know, we're all going to agree, a little out of the norm, it may well achieve his goal by 2023.
Yeah, you know, we were talking during our business hour prep meeting. You know, Elon Musk has this indestructible truck, and when he unveils it, it breaks, and yet he still sells thousands of them. It's like, as long as Elon's involved, people don't care.
That's right. You know what? If there's news and there's Elon, chances are there's something good happening generally. Whether the success is measured by your or my standards or his is really the key here. I think they're measured by his. And in the end, nobody can argue with share price. The valuation of his SpaceX venture is over $80 billion. So things are working for him. And whether or not we agree with the methods doesn't matter. It's working.
Very true. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. That's Technology Thursday. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, how communities are dealing with the crumbling of the traditional retail district.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The retail district has long been a staple of many communities, but times are changing. We welcome Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, you hear Disney's now closing a bunch of retail stores, moving more online. A lot of retailers are doing this, and it sort of left us wondering what happens to these retail districts that communities for years have really built as a pillar of economic development.
Well, you know, brick and mortar is in a struggle, as we know it has been, and whether it's at the mall or if it's downtown, it's in a struggle. But remember, we're going to see a big transference away from the cities. You know, for 40 years, people have been moving to the city. For the next 40 years, they're going to move away from the city. And that trend was already in place, and now it's just accelerating. And COVID has bent the shape of that. So now we're really noticing it, and we're seeing what's happening. But that trend is coming, and we're going to see more suburban, more rural living. You can be out farther. You're going to the office less often. You figured out how to work from home. That's all happened during COVID. So it was going to come anyway, but now it's just going to come faster. And remember, a lot of these retailers, they're already doing 45, 50% of their business online. They don't need all those stores, and you're not going to be going to all those stores. You'll still shop in a store, because it'll be fun and interesting and they'll be doing some cool stuff, but you're not going to need nearly as many of them. They're going to be much smaller and they're going to be further out from the city than they have been, because that's where the people are going.
And whether retailers like it or not, even in those outlying areas, the big mega mall where people would just go and spend 4 or 5 hours, that's just not what they want to do anymore, at least for the most part.
Well, you know, there used to be 1,200 of those big mega malls, and now there's about 960 or so big mega malls, and we only need about 278 big mega malls, maybe 300 if we're lucky. So that's going to change as well. But hey, if you're Casey's General Store or your Tractor Supply or Ollie's Bargain Barn or somebody that's dealing out there in the suburbs and further out, it'll be good for you. The customer's coming. If you're one of the places they're leaving, it won't be good for you.
Yeah, very true. Thanks so much. It's the future, and it's now. The pandemic just sped it up. Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. Past programs and podcasts of the Noon Business Hour, WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.